And welcome into Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. I'm your host, Robbie Stanley. Hope everybody's doing well on this Wednesday night in Nashville, Tennessee, joined by my bald and bearded brother, Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, former Preds goalie. C-Mace, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
What's up, buddy? Can people see us, or is this just us zooming right now?
We're on the radio. People can see us on a live stream. We're on Twitch, Facebook, all over the place. So people can see your beautiful face
Should have combed the beard and put a little product in it before I did this. But no, I'm just kidding. What's up, everyone?
We are also joined by Predators forward Matthew Olivier. Matthew, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
I'm good. What's going on, guys?
Not a whole lot. Obviously, you guys, weather's a little bit better down where you guys are right now than it is here in Nashville, Tennessee. Look pretty nice out there today.
It's chilly for Florida, but overall for February, it's really nice weather, so can't complain.
So you guys can't go out that much, so you can't really
– we can't really – all I got is like the patio in my hotel room. That's pretty much it.
Oh, man, that sucks. Hopefully one of the best trips of the year, too, going down to Florida and nice – you guys had a 5-6 day trip down there and you guys are stuck between the rink and the hotel.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a drag, but we're coming back in March and some of the boys are already hoping that COVID might slim down by that time and we'll be able to enjoy it fully. So
fingers crossed.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. I don't know what that might be worse is being there and not being able to go out and do anything, but that's the times we're living in. We've all had to adapt at this point. Glad to have Matthew Olivier on with us. Philip Forsberg will join us right around 6:30 as well. So looking forward to this edition of Smashville Live and Matthew, obviously let's start on the ice with you guys, a tough road trip so far, two losses to the defending Stanley Cup champion. But overall, this year, 9 games in, what have you seen from your group? What do you like about the group that you have?
I think we're trying to not find our identity, but I think execute our identity on the ice more consistently. I think we've shown games that we've done it the whole game, some games not at all, some just kind of parts of it. It's definitely part of the learning process of this year. But you know, the season's so short that we want to get that squared away as soon as possible. And the guys in the room, they know, and we're all aware, and we're, you know, we're really focusing on getting that identity more consistently on the ice right now.
All right. I got to ask you something. I want to get into you because last year, I know you played, you came up, you played 8 games. You got a taste of the NHL. One of my best friend actually coaches for the Colorado Eagles. And after every time he plays, like, man, he's like, you guys need Matthew Olivier. This kid's unbelievable. He's like, he goes out there and he beats us up. He scores. He's like, he's the complete player. Like he was kind of, you know, he was in your mold too. So, you know, you get a taste coming in this year. I watched those two, you know, scrimmages or whatever, the games that you had. And to me, like, there's no way they're not keeping you after that. You know, and before camp, they're talking, you know, all right, is Ellie Tolvanen going to make it? Is Phil Tomasino going to crack the lineup? Is this guy? Is this guy? You know, obviously you have a very strong belief in your abilities. What was your mindset going into camp this year? Because I love the story and I just love the way that you earned your spot.
Well, thanks. I think in the summer, I knew that there was going to be some changes and like you said, I got a taste last year and I think I did well for the most part, but I was kind of shy in my role, you know, not really getting in there that much, kind of, I wouldn't say in awe of everything, but just kind of just on the train, didn't really want to, you know, get in there as much as I wanted to. And, I think my whole focus for the long summer, cause we ended up going until December before we came to Nashville, was really this year, just there's no half measures, no, you know, doubts in my mind. You go in and you do you. And if I was going to do that, then at least I put myself in a position where I can get the best chance possible. And fortunately enough, it worked out.
And Matthew, you get on the board the other night. Roman Josi makes an unreal play to get into the zone. Ryan Johansson with a quick shot on net. And you're there for the rebound for your first NHL goal. What's that feeling like? It's always fascinating. You've worked so hard to get to this point your entire life, and you finally get your first NHL goal. Like, I'm sure you've dreamt of that moment so many times. What was it like in real time?
Yeah, and what made it even more special for me was that it was something that most people, most experts, if you will, they didn't really see that happening for me. You know, except for my family and probably coaches that I had in my career, nobody thought Matthew Olivier was going to make it to the NHL, let alone score a goal. And that was the most satisfying part for me, was that I knew I could do it, and to actually do it and get that out of the way was definitely, you know, gratifying and you know, it's a nice tap on the shoulder, to be honest. So
you've worked your whole life for that. Like, you know, you're undrafted, you get a chance, and you always know, you know, when you're an undrafted player, when you go to Milwaukee, sometimes, you know, you're not quite here on the totem pole. You got to earn your way up. And actually you had a lot of chances too in the previous games, to score as well. And you really have a unique, combination of, size, speed, skill, grit. Who do you model yourself? If there's an NHL player, maybe you idolized, growing up, or somebody in the league, who do you kind of model your game, or who do you kind of compare yourself to?
Well, I've always gotten like the usual kind of big power forward / grinder types. When you think of a role that I would have in a team, we just played Pat Maroon, who's won 2 Stanley Cups in a row. That's the type of role that I can fill out in a team and provide. You know, Ryan Reeves is another guy. Those guys, I think that's my primary role in a team. And that doesn't necessarily mean scrap. You know, it can happen in a game, and obviously it's something that I'm willing to do. In today's NHL, you got to be able to do other things. And I think I want to provide that role, and also production, you know, and if I can build on that, then after that, I think, you know, I'd be a player that can complete a team well. But my primary role is really to get in there and be physical, energetic, retrieve pucks on the forecheck, control the pucks in the corners, get to the front of the net, score those greasy goals. I mean, that first goal that I got was simply by going to the net and pucks bounce your way sometimes and it ends up going in. So I think if I base my game off that and do it consistently, then the production will come along as well. And that's when I think I'll reach that full role that I want to contribute.
And Matthew, speaking of that first goal, some NHL history made on that first goal. You become the first player born in the state of Mississippi to score a goal in the National Hockey League. Now, most people may not know you were born in the state of Mississippi in Biloxi, your father playing for the Mississippi Seawolves of the ECHL during that time. Give us kind of your background. How long did you stay in Mississippi? Have you been back since? Like, what does that state mean to you?
All right. So this, this is kind of special because I only lived physically in Mississippi for 2 months from age 0 to 2 months. And then we went back to Quebec for the summer, and my dad, played in Mississippi that year, but he spent most of those, I think I want to say 5 years in Oklahoma City, playing for the Blazers in the Central Hockey League. So that's where we were mostly based. But for that season, he got a tryout in the East Coast with the Seawolves, and that's where we were. So it's funny because, yeah, I was born there, and I kind of get that record. But I was only there for 2 months, so that's the funny part in all this.
You're born there. Actually, you know what? I think I played against your dad when he was in Manitoba in 2000, 2001.
Yeah, he was there for a while.
Yeah, he played a few games there, and I know he played in Germany, and he played all over. But yeah, I gotta run this by you too, because we kind of make up nicknames on the broadcast sometimes. And right now we have you coined as the Biloxi Bull. Is that right? Is that right?
Yeah. No, that's a good one. I like it. That's okay. Fine. Because okay. the boys in the room have been kind of wondering, do we call you Ollie? Do we call you Matty O? I've been getting like a bunch of different ones, and then Biloxi Bull, that's definitely, that's unique.
Okay, there you go.
Who knew the 2 months that you spent in Mississippi would leave such an impact on your life? I mean, NHL history right in our midst. The Biloxi Bull history, nicknames, it's all over the place for Matthew Olivier.
I guess the only one that could have seen this coming was my old man. The only one. He really wanted me to be born in the U.S. because my family's Canadian, and he wanted me to have that advantage, and he had that all in the back of his mind when it was all going on. So I owe a lot to him and my mom and my sister as well.
So Matthew, you've obviously spent some time in Milwaukee as well. And as I mentioned before, you get your first goal. It's such a journey to get to this point for you. How would you describe your journey to fight and scratch and claw your way to get to this point in the NHL where now you've made it, you're on an opening night roster, you got through training camp, and you're here with this team and carved out a role for yourself? How would you describe that journey?
It's been a journey that every step of the way was about getting better and better and better and not always adding a tool in the toolbox every year. And I put a lot of pride in my summer training, my off-season training. I put a lot of time in it. And I think every time I come back from that, I try to have something new or at least something that I'm doing better. And I think especially in season in Milwaukee, I had the chance to work with coaches that, you know, and Carl Taylor, Scott Ford, Greg Arallo, that really helped me out and really helped me hone my game and really develop that identity. And credit to the organization and Scott Nickel, our GM, that the first year I came in, I had an AHL deal. And usually those are the guys that are kind of either in and out of the lineup or send down to the East Coast even sometimes. And with what happened in camp, they really gave me a chance to showcase what I had in the AHL. And after that, they gave me, you know, as I was performing, they kept giving me, you know, more and more responsibilities. And that's just how I approached these last 2 years. And they really helped me out. I owe a lot to them.
I gotta ask you about Scott Nickel. I played with Scooter. You know, he's a big fan of yours too, because I'd always ask him like, who's coming up the pipeline? Who do I got to look out for? Who's some names that, you know, that we need to know here in the next couple of years? And he'd always put you in the group of players. He really likes your game. He's a, you know, a smaller guy, but he's really feisty and he was a rat out there. And what's it like? Because I remember when I was playing, the GM was like, you kind of see him and, you know, be a little intimidated, kind of quiet or whatever. And, you know, you talk if, you know, spoke if you're spoken to type of thing. But like he goes on the ice with you guys. When you guys are down in Milwaukee, he come on the ice. I don't know if he's like that with you guys, but he's always joking around. He's quick to like chirp somebody. Does he give that? Does he do a good job of building that kind of relationship with you guys when you were in Milwaukee?
Yeah, he's our GM and he's also our player development coach. So like you said, he's on the ice with us and he works on our skills. And yeah, he gets, you know, all the boys feel super comfortable around him. And obviously we know he's our boss. So we're trying to do the right thing by him, but also that, you know, you can have a conversation with Scooter and you can talk about anything and he really allows you to be comfortable and feel at home and really helps you out too. It gives you good feedback and what to do, what not to do for certain players and all that. So no, Scooter is definitely a big help and has been a big role, has had a big role, sorry, in all of this.
That's awesome. I'll just tell a quick story about Scooter. It's just so funny because I see him now. He's like, oh, you know, he's the GM and I see him at the rink. And we used to sit on the back of the plane. And I don't know if you remember this, Matthew, but or you'll remember this, Robbie. They used to have those PSPs. PlayStation 4. Yeah. We used to play SOCOM at the back. And so him and I would sit together. We're on the same team. There's like 11 of us on the plane. And Greg Zannon and Kevin Klein would sit ahead of us. And when every time Scotty got killed, he would just like boot the back of like Kevin Klein's because he'd always sit in the weeds and like snipe. But it's just so funny to think of, you know, that guy that I played with as a GM. But he's such a good communicator. And I knew that, you know, once his career was done, he'd be perfect for that type of role. And he's doing well. You guys, I think you guys must have been the favorite last year for the Calder Cup. The season got shut down, but anyway, it's kind of funny to, I just love to hear the other side of it too.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually all those guys that are like player that used to play and now they're in a management role that you always hear great stories about them. They're usually guys that, you know, most of their teammates, they love them. So that doesn't surprise me though, that he was that competitive about a PSP game.
Oh, it was hilarious. Bergevin in Montreal too. I've heard a ton of funny stories about him.
Yeah. We are off and running here on Smashville Live on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Chris Mason, joined now by Preds forward Matthew Olivier. Philip Forsberg coming up a little bit later in the show. If you're streaming with us, whether it's on Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, wherever the platform is you're using, if you've got questions, send them in on the chat and we'll get to as many of those as possible as well. We got another segment coming up with Preds Forward Matthew Olivier. That's next. This is Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Robbie Stanley alongside Chris Mason, joined now by Predators forward Matthew Olivier. Philip Forsberg coming up here in just a few minutes as well. So a loaded show for you here on Smashville Live tonight. And Matthew, we've talked about kind of the journey that you've had to get to the NHL at this point. I just wonder, like, you know, now that you've been up here for a little bit and you've got some good game action underneath your belt, what's it like? Like, what is the difference between the AHL and the NHL in terms of the style of play? Because I've heard people say, you know, it's not a huge jump, but I've heard other people say, you know, it's so fast, it's so much different, so much more physical. What's your experience been like in that area so far?
Well, the AHL is, you know, skating speed and physicality is as fast and as physical as up here. But I think that the big difference is the execution with the puck. It's way faster up here. Everything is just within seconds. You gotta have some poise. Sometimes you gotta keep it. Sometimes you gotta make that quick play. And I think the big difference between the AHL and the NHL, from what I've seen, is that it's just here you got to make that decision quicker. You got to execute quicker. And you know, players are, they're the best players in the world. So they're the smartest players on the world too. So you have to match that, that speed and execution.
Is there any, I agree with you too. When I played the minors for 6 years and got called up and down there. And I find when everyone in the NHL, everybody's good. In the AHL, you have like, you know, it's not like a huge drop off. I played with guys, I'm sure you have too, Matthew, that had as more skill than a lot of guys I play with in the NHL. But like Matthew is saying, they don't quite think the game quick enough. And when they get up there, they can't use their skill. And they don't work as hard off the ice or whatever the case may be. You got to be the complete package at whatever your role is. And if you're, you know, a skill guy in the minors or in junior, which a lot of guys, you don't get to that level if you can't play the game, especially now. You have to be able to adapt and maybe, you know, change your role or play a little, you know, get outside your comfort zone just to make it there. And then once you make it there, you can kind of, you know, grow from there. But it's a lot quicker. Matthew, I'll add on that is, you know, is there anyone in this league, like you've got your coach too raves about your personality and your presence in the room. And for somebody as young as you, that's a tough thing to do. Is there any like nerves, or you come up here and you're sick, you know what? I work my butt off to get here. I've had every step of the way, like you said, I'm trying to put more tools and I'm trying to learn. I'm going to get better. I want to be a sponge and learn all this stuff. But now you're a 23-year-old kid and they're already talking about your, you know, personality and presence in the dressing room. You're starting hockey games in the NHL, for crying out loud. Is that something that you just, maybe with your dad or something, that you just, you know, you're going to be yourself and try to, you know, do what you can in the room too? Because that's a big element to bring to a team as well.
Well, my dad always told me that your presence in the room and what you bring to a locker room is always backed up by what you do on the ice. So you can have the biggest, like the funniest guy ever in the room, and if on the ice it doesn't work out, then at some point it kind of falls off, it kind of falls back. So I've never tried to be anything else than myself. I don't try to go out of my way and be something that I'm not. I'm just casual every day. I'm just kind of doing my thing. And I think if I come to the rink and work hard every day and put the work in and eventually like the results are coming in, then the locker room stuff, is it just kind of sorts itself out. And you don't have to force anything on that part. It's just, I think personally, if you put the performance and the work on the ice, then it just makes that part easier.
Matthew, we had Matt Duchene on my radio show this morning, just kind of talking about, you know, the chances that he's been getting, chances a lot of guys have been getting 5-on-5, and just how they're not falling with a lot of consistency right now, and kind of battling through some frustration there. As a team, when you guys are getting chances 5-on-5 and you're not scoring with the regularity that you'd like to be scoring, what's that process like? Like, how do you battle through the frustration of trying not to let it take you out of your game, but also knowing that if you keep up, the chances are eventually going to go in?
Yeah, the biggest thing about that is there's always times in the year where that happens. it happens on any team. You can be on the best team in the league and you'll have like cold streaks and times that bounces aren't going your way. And sometimes it lasts two games, sometimes it lasts 10. It changes, but the teams that get out of it are the ones that stick to the plan, that just stick with the game plan and what we're trying to do in our identity. And that's what we're focusing on right now. It comes back to what I said at the start of the show, where right now we're trying to find that consistency and that identity. And we know that I think the third period against Tampa last game was a perfect example. That third period, we just kind of kept at it, and then two goals go in like right away. And that can change any moment. And unfortunately, it didn't go our way for the result. But that's something that if you keep doing that, at one point it's going to go your way.
You know, I'm just going to ask you a question about the goaltenders too. I'm sure you played guys. First of all, I watched these guys in practice. You know, I wasn't a very skilled goaltender, but I always, you know, worked my butt off, and that was kind of my thing. But you have two, probably, you know, one of the best goalies to ever play the game, and then Juice, who's just an absolute stud. And I guess in practice, you get to appreciate him more. Have you ever had two guys that compete as hard as they do in practice?
Compete as hard as they do? No. I've had players that compete really hard.
Yeah.
But they're the best for a reason. That's they outcompete everybody. And Juice is so technically sound and fast, and he's a small goalie for the NHL, but you feel like he's 6'4" in the net. There's no holes anywhere. You're trying to shoot. Like, I'm just trying to shoot at one spot, and I'm like, all right, this maybe go in. Like, usually you kind of read a goalie and you look at it and you're like, all right, I think low block, like there's something there. Juice, I'm like, all right, I'll just swing it towards a corner and hope it goes in, because there's no holes. But and Pex is the same way. They compete and they make it hard on us. So when you score a goal, it makes it that much more awesome in practice. You're like, all right, like I beat those guys. That's awesome.
You give the cheers. You
yeah.
Do you give the old woo when you score? Or do you just score, go back in line, and just kind of? Are you not there yet?
I do it for the other guys. If another guy will score a nice goal, I'll do that. But if it's me, I put my head down, go
not
back.
Yeah, give it a couple months. Yeah, give it a couple months, right?
That's right. Yeah. No, I need to earn that before I do that.
Preds forward Matthew Olivier has been our guest here on Smashville Live. Hey, Matthew, we appreciate so much you taking some time out of your night to join us here on the show, and best of luck as y'all get things rolling back again tomorrow against Florida.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me, guys. It's been awesome.
Absolutely. Preds forward Matthew Olivier has been our guest here on Smashville Live, and when we come back, we'll be joined by another Preds forward, Philip Forsberg, joining us next. This is Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Smashville Live.
Welcome back in Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Robbie Stanley here alongside Chris Mason, Preds TV analyst, and we are now pleased to be joined by Predators winger Philip Forsberg. Philip, what's going on, my man? How are we doing?
Doing well. Just had dinner here in Fort Lauderdale and get ready for another big match tomorrow.
What's going on the road like right now? I mean, obviously, it's a whole lot different than it normally is in really all aspects of the season this year. But what's the road like right now with all the protocols and everything in place?
Yeah, it's obviously a little different. You have to. I mean, we have a little bit of a team room, but it's all like if you're in there, you got to stay away and yeah, I mean, 6 feet apart, wear masks, stuff like that. So it's definitely a different kind of hangout, and you're not allowed to hang out in rooms like you normally would do after games and stuff like that. So that lounge has been, yeah, it's been the best way, I guess, to bring guys together while, yeah, still maintaining the measurements that we're required to do.
I was going to ask Olivier this, but I'll ask you. I know you're a gamer. So now is it okay? Do you bring your game system on the road?
Do you have a PlayStation? I brought it. Say that again.
You have a PlayStation 5 yet, too, by the way?
I did get one of those, yeah. So that was key. But it's a little big to bring on the road, so I didn't bring that. But I do have a gaming system with me, and it definitely helps to kill time. I mean, yesterday it was a little chilly here, but we were fortunate we were able to be outside a little bit. But then it definitely helps to spend some time to play some video games.
So what's your game of choice? Like you and I have talked before, you're a big Call of Duty guy, you know, NHL, you played in a tournament back in the, when the pause was going on as well. Like, what's your game of choice right now? What's Philip Forsberg into?
It's still Call of Duty. The Wi-Fi has been letting me down a little bit in this hotel. So
the worst. I know.
So me and Eki has been going to town on it, especially in Tampa. It was great Wi-Fi there, so it worked great there. But then here in Fort Lauderdale, it's been a little different. So I actually downloaded the new 2K21, the golf game, PGA Tour. So I just got that going this afternoon, actually, before I jumped on this call. So I think that's those are still the two choices. And I did beat up the boys pretty good in FIFA last night, too, and down in the lounge. So you can ask whoever's on the show next for that. So.
Nice little shot you got in there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How many of the boys play? Like, do you guys have squads, or do you play against each other, or do you just go a couple of you guys and then take on, you know, just random people?
I think we got maybe, I'd say probably 6-7 guys that play Warzone, like Call of Duty. And, it was just been me and Eki. I heard Matty O, you just had him on the show. I heard he's been pumping his own tires. So I can't wait to see him in action too. And, Matt Benning was also interested in joining the team. So we should be able to get a good squad here going for the next couple of trips.
So, nice. So, Philip, I can't let this interview go on any further without asking you about what a lot of people on social media have pointed out, and that is your epic mustache. It has been all over the place. People love it. What is the inspiration for this mustache, and is it going to be a permanent thing? Like, is this going to be the new look for Philip Forsberg?
Yeah, I mean, I always wanted to get the Maze goatee working, but I have these like bald spots right here, so it doesn't connect well enough. So then I think it was March last year. I wasn't really playing great hockey, so I just figured, you know how it is, Maze, you just try to change something. And so I tried the mustache, and then that obviously scored right away in the first game with that. And then the quarantine hit, but yeah, it was nobody could see it, so I just kept growing it and growing it, and then eventually the curls came in too. So it's now we're just trying to groom it as good as we can.
You decided to grow the most glorious mustache. How much product? Like, you got to put some wax on there to get the curl at the end, no? Or does that just come?
It's actually gotten to the point now when it's kind of natural. So I'm not going to lie. Oh. I did try to like puff it up a little bit for this interview here, but I don't have to put any, like, I do put a little bit of wax in going to games and stuff. It's unfortunate we have to wear the masks, obviously, but now it's all natural. Maybe a little water, that's it.
That's awesome. You know, what's funny is I saw they're doing Ellie Tolvin, obviously played last game. He had his gladiator shots, and he just got like a little greasy stash. And probably, I was thinking as soon as he walked in the room and saw Phil's, he's like, oh man, I gotta shave this thing off. So it's just not going
to
work.
Yeah, he's got a long way to go. He's got years to get there. I don't think I had much more than him when I was his age too. So.
Reds forward Philip Forsberg on with us here on Smashville Live on ESPN 102.5 The Game. If you're streaming this on YouTube or Twitch or Twitter, whatever platform you're using, if you've got a question, hit us up in the chat and we'll get to as many as we possibly can. Philip, I want to ask you about a former teammate of yours and C-Mace, one of your good friends as well. Shea Weber hits the 1,000 game mark last night. Obviously, an incredible accomplishment, still playing at a really high level at 35 years old. Phil, when you look back at your time with Shea, what stands out to you about him being his teammate and the leadership that he put on display for you guys?
I mean, it was just one of those guys that would leave it all out there. You know, when I first came in, I was obviously very intimidated by him, just the physical statue that he presents. Like, I don't know what he is, but obviously a big boy. And the way he played the game, it was he made the news for smashing Zetterberg's head into the boards there a couple of years. So that obviously made it to Swedish news before I was even a Predator. So I knew that he had that mean side to him. And then once you get to know him, he's one of the nicest guys you can ever meet. Just an incredible leader. Just coming in as a young guy, being able to just watch a guy like him and Mike Fisher, and obviously Pex are still here. And those guys setting the example. And it's obviously awesome to see that he hit 1,000, and the way he's playing, I'm guessing he's going to try to get a lot more games in him as well.
Yeah, it was crazy too. You know, talking about gaming, like, and I'm sure you know this too, Robbie, you guys in the media, you see one side of Shea, right?
He's always
straight faced, man, a few words, but off the ice, he's hilarious. Like, I remember I roomed with him when he was a rookie. We roomed together for a couple years. And we'd bring I don't know if it was PlayStation 2 or 3 on the road every time. So we'd be like, the boys used to make so much fun of us. Like, you guys are such losers. who cares? But he is, he really grew into leader. And one of the things that about his leadership quality is, you know, some guys get to a point where they're, you know, you earn your way in the dressing room and then you get a letter on your jersey and then you kind of change. You feel like you have to be more vocal or, you know, give more speeches or that type of thing. He was never that type of guy. He just kind of stayed true to himself. And Phil, you'd probably know this too. He didn't speak a lot in the room, but when he did, just because of all the things that he did on the ice, the way he prepared, the way he practiced, it's all business. And he does have that presence about him, but he really stayed true to who he was and didn't go outside of that comfort zone. So he's always been an authentic guy and just a great person. But, you know, I'd love for the fans to see what he's like away from, you know, that side of it, because he'd come in the room and he'd, before warmups, he'd do this funny, we all knew, you know, everything's timed out, you know, down to the minute. So, you know, when the last song comes on before we used to have to shut off the music, he'd come and he'd do like a funny dance. So he'd done his warm up. He'd come and do like a funny, nobody would ever guess that Shea Weber would do that. It's kind of funny, but, and the way he plays the game, the fact that he got 1,000 games, wow, pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, and still playing at a really high level so far in Montreal. Phil, you brought up Zetterberg there. Your dad a couple years ago told me a story when I was talking to him about a story I was doing on you of your first game here in Nashville and obviously playing against Detroit in that game. And Henrik Zetterberg kind of welcoming you to the league in the faceoff there in Nashville. What do you remember about that moment? What do you remember about your first game in Nashville?
Yeah, like you said, that was obviously the standout, I guess I should say. I mean, I got to Nashville the day before. David Poile picked me up at the airport and just got traded, 10 days before that or something like that. So it was obviously a quick turnaround. And I was told I was going to come in, and I think it was a back-to-back right away. So I was going to play the second night just to get used to it a little bit. And then as soon as I get to in the car, I can't remember if it was David or, because after that we went to the rink and then Barry Trotz drove me out to Patrick Hornquist's place where I was going to stay. So one of them told me that you're playing tomorrow. And after that, it was just, all right, I got to go to bed. So, I mean, yeah. And then, like you said, we ended up playing Detroit, ended up playing on the top line with David Legwon and Taylor Beck because of all the injuries that Preds had at that point. That was the guys they choose to put against Zetterberg and Datsyuk on the other side. So, it's a nice dash, minus two, and
yeah, that ended my
good
career,
start to your career.
Those last few games of the season ended my NHL career. I had to go over there.
I can only imagine.
You know what?
That was the top line. I don't even know what kind of D pair you had in front of you. So.
No, it was awesome though. But you know, one thing actually, like, you know, brings me back to that time is when you came over. Obviously, very, very highly touted, and you got in there. One of the things I noticed instantly was your release. And even like I watch games now, like guys, they might save the puck, but they can't pick it up clean. So they don't get any shot you have. And I notice a lot of times you can shoot it just as hard out front. I don't know if it's your strength or the way you bend the stick or whatever, but you always seem to change your release point when you're shooting the puck. Is that something you've worked on or just something you've always done naturally? Is that a conscious thing that you do? But I always see goalies have trouble, even if it's you got a clean line of sight on the shot. They can never just get it clean.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that I think kind of came naturally to start. And then once you realize it was something that was hard to play against, like for, as you said, as a goalie, you try to perfect it, try to get better at it. And yeah, obviously to this day, that's still something that I try to do, especially in the summers when there's a little easier shooting on shooting. Like my backyard, my parents' place, we still have that shooting range set up. And that's something I try to do. And like you said, it's, yeah, everybody can shoot when they're on one leg dialed in coming up, you know, nobody's really in front of them. But I think the one thing is that you get those 3-4 shots a season. You got to be able to shoot with people on you, shoot with through screens and stuff like that. And I think if you look at the top goal scorers in the league, they know how to do that. And obviously I want to be one of those guys. So that's something that I definitely need to keep improving.
Predators forward Philip Forsberg on with us for Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We've got one more segment with Philip coming up. We'll get into the trip right now for the Nashville Predators. Some more fun topics to get to with Philip Forsberg as well. This is Smashville Live. Robbie Stanley, Chris Mason, and Philip Forsberg here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
This is Smashville Live. Smashville Live.
Welcome back in Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Robbie Stanley alongside former Preds goalie, current Preds TV analyst Chris Mason, and Preds star winger Philip Forsberg joining us here on the show as well. And Philip, we've got some hockey questions to get to that we've been either texted in or twitched in, tweeted in, all kinds of stuff with the platforms that we're on. We'll get to those here in just a second. I do have one more non-hockey question for you. There's people out there that may not know, you're pretty good friends with George Kittle of the San Francisco 49ers, Robert Tonyan of my beloved Green Bay Packers as well. How did that friendship start with those guys, and what kind of guys are those guys to hang out with?
I mean, I guess it started with my girlfriend Erin being best friends with George's wife Claire, and so they were obviously friends, and they ended up moving here for their off season. Basically, they have their off season home in Nashville, which is great. Obviously, they're great people, both George and Claire. And then Robbie is basically like the George's little brother. He kind of lives with them in the off season too. And that's kind of how I got to know them. So it's basically through Erin, and then our friendship grew right away from that, and kind of kept building on it during the quarantine when they're obviously not in their season either. They're spending an extra time in the off season working out here, getting ready. And I was able to work out with them and got to know a couple other footballers, and a lot of footballers around Nashville in the off season. So a lot of great guys, and obviously a lot of similarities in workouts and stuff like that. So it was great to be able to do that with our coach, Josh Cuthbert, that was kind of running it. And yeah, like you said, Todd, Robbie had a great season for Green Bay. I realized they're more fans than you think around there. Obviously Chad, security guard, is big Packers fan as well. So there's they had a great season. Unfortunately for the 49ers, a lot of injuries kind of ruined their season, but both teams probably be back for another good run next year.
You know, it's awesome actually, because I've seen George in the Lexus Lounge sometimes, and he's got your jersey on, and mm-hmm. I know you've been out there a couple of times and you wear his jersey. I just love it. I think it's really cool. And it's like, it's also a good thing too, as an athlete of a certain sport, to like ask, you know, the questions, what's it like when you guys do this? I was friends with a few baseball players, and they'd always like, you hockey guys are crazy. And some football guys like, you guys are nuts. I'm like, we're nuts. You guys are crazy. Every play you could be, you know, you could have the injury. It's really cool. But I'll stick with the off the hockey topic. Obviously during the quarantine, people are finding stuff to do, and you did a lot of unbelievable social media posts. I think fans love getting to know the player behind, you know, just being on the ice. And I have to ask you, the one you did, one unbelievable one, I think it was in your condo, where you walked around the condo and you're like, you drained a putt, you did all these different things, and you went, how many takes of that? And the other one was with you and your girlfriend when you're doing the unicycle.
Oh yeah.
That was, how many takes were those? Those are keep doing that, by the way. Those are unreal. But how many?
Surprisingly, the unicycle one took less tries actually than the,
really?
Than the apartment one. Yeah. So we did had the script kind of drawn up for the unicycle one, and there was a couple of tries. I think we had maybe three tries on the first, but it was like, it was way more intensive. I mean, she's on a unicycle. I don't know if it can get more intense, but we had something even better planned out to start, but we just realized it wasn't going to happen. So we had to make it a little simple, dull it down a little bit, and obviously just a couple touches and she could dunk it on that thing. But it turned out great. But then there was a couple where I missed the putt. There was a couple when when it wasn't on cue, and it's tough. I mean, it's hard. I'll credit to all the people that work in social media, because it takes a lot. But it was fun. Like I said, we had way more time than we wanted on our hands, so we figured we'd do something fun with it.
Philip, we've got a question for you here in the chat. This coming from King Wannabe TV on Twitch. With the shortened season, how hard is it to get going earlier in the season rather than being able to warm up for a few weeks and get up to game speed?
I think it changed a little bit. I think mostly the fact that there was no, like you said, no preseason games, a couple of days shorter of training camp, and it definitely, the first games, it's a little bit all over the place. But I thought our camp was very competitive. We had two scrimmages that was really good, really high pace and intensity. And I think that's kind of how you have to view it, as that those two games were the preseason games. And every day at training camp, I thought the guys brought everything that you can ask for and made it very competitive. And And that definitely helped. There was no time to obviously to ease into camp or anything like that, which definitely was a transition. But at the same time, a lot of us were there. I came in, I think, November 1st or something like that. So a lot of the guys were there for almost 2 months, more than that. Some guys together skating in smaller groups. And then the closer we get, obviously, we could ramp it up and get more team-like stuff. And definitely a difference that we hope we don't have to deal with again. But I think everybody really did the best we could with it.
So what was it like this? Obviously, you've been here for 8 years or whatever it is now. You know, you guys have had a largely in part the same core, almost zero turnover the last few years. This year, you guys had a different, different off season. A lot of great guys on the way out. You know, you got a lot of good new characters in the room. What's the feeling like? Everybody seems to feel like, and I do too, when I see it on the ice. Obviously, in some games, it's, you know, there's stretches or whatever that, you guys have trouble, whether it's a penalty kill. But for the most part, I just really feel like you guys have a hardworking team. You're trying to create an identity. Is that something that in the dressing room, you know, it's a matter of time before you put it all together and then you can be what you want to be?
Yeah. I think you look at these two games against Tampa, just the two recent ones, I think we're playing pretty good hockey overall. And then obviously, like you said, there's stretches where we kind of fade away, and penalty kill has obviously been a little bit of an issue going into it, just as the power play has been a little bit of an issue. So I think those two things are something we definitely have to figure out. But like I said, our 5-on-5 play, I think we're playing well, and we're playing against the defending cup champion, and we're playing even. It's the chances are even. It's a lot. Zone times are even. So I think that's something that we need to obviously improve, but at the same time, we need to look at that's something that we've been doing pretty well, and our record obviously has to be better, and it's going to have to come up throughout the season to make a playoff here. But at the same time, it's early. Like you said, this is by far the biggest turnaround of a team that I've been a part of since I came here. And it takes a little time, but at the same time, we don't have a lot of time. So we obviously have to address it. And I think we've been doing a really good job with that, especially here on this trip.
Philip, what have you seen out of Mikael Granlund since he's come back? It looks like, you know, when the coaching change was made last year, I mean, he just took off and was one of the best forwards on the team. It looks like he's picked up right where he left off. What are you seeing out there from number 64?
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I think just knowing how he was in Minnesota, I mean, he was really hard to play against. You hated playing against him. It would usually be, our lineup against him and Mikko Koivu and whoever they would play with them. So he's a two-way player that can really do it all. I mean, to be honest, he's a great skater. He's very responsible. He's got high skills with the puck, great vision. So I think it took him a little time to get comfortable here. And obviously, it was his second. I mean, he's been in Minnesota his whole career. It's a big change. And everything that's been going on. I mean, he had a baby just when he got traded. It seems like that seems to be the mantra around our team, with everybody's having babies. But I think, like you said, he came in late for camp this year, but he was dialed in from day one, played great. I think in the first game, from barely skating with the team, he just came in and played really hard. And like I said, he's got that skill set that definitely can take us to the next level. So I'm really excited to keep watching him.
But the question is, can he play Warzone? More important.
I don't think so yet. I haven't seen anything. I haven't seen him, and I haven't heard anything coming out of him. There's, I think, Tolvi says he plays, but he's also like just like you, Mace, looking for a PS5. So maybe you guys can team up.
Yeah, let me know. Maybe talk to Kittle too if he can get some. They got connections. Let me know.
Robbie, he's more an Xbox guy, so I don't know if
you can. Look, I'll take either one. Let me know either way. Philip, we got one more thing for you here. We've got one more fan question to get to. This coming on Twitch says, Phil, what's one thing you'd like to see the team improve coming up here tomorrow against Florida?
Tomorrow, I think, like we address special teams. I don't think we need to talk about those anymore. They're obviously keys in the games. But just our 5-on-5, I think we need to just be a little more consistent. Like you said, like May said too, we're playing really good for certain stretches of the game, and then we're kind of fading away and kind of going off script a little bit. And I think that's the main thing, just to try to put a 60-minute effort on the 5-on-5 game, and I think we will be successful that way.
Preds forward Philip Forsberg has been our guest here on Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Philip, we appreciate so much you taking time to join us tonight.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Good luck tomorrow, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, the best stash in the game. Philip Forsberg has been our guest. C-Mace, final thoughts looking ahead to the game tomorrow against Florida. What do you want to see? What's the key to victory for the Preds tomorrow?
Well, I just think, like Phil said, you know, there's been a lot of great stretches. They went toe-to-toe with Tampa. They got down early. This team doesn't quit. I think, you know, as far as somebody that analyzes the games, for me, that's what I'm looking for, is this team that, you know, you can say what your identity is, but when you go on the ice, the proof is in the pudding. And to me, I think they have the intangibles. I think they have the balance in their team. Some of the things they, you know, may have been missing the last couple seasons in terms of grit and just that fight that they have. And it's just cleaning up a little bit of the special teams, like the penalty kill. You know, when you go on the penalty kill, you're taking, you know, Ryan Johansson out of the game, you're taking Matt Duchene out of the game, and Philip Forsberg, and, you know, some of these types of players. It's tough to get completely into it and get that momentum built up when you're, you know, you keep having to kill off penalties, especially against Florida's got a great, I think they're over 30% or something right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's something that's obviously, I know they probably talked about it, you know, every single game they've had issues with it, but you know, you clean that area up, they're one of the best teams 5-on-5. They go toe to toe with anybody 5-on-5. If they can improve their special teams, you know, you got to cut it off. You don't want to look at the percentages of it. You want to look at it. Okay. Start from now. Let's get better. Let's reset, you know, and we'll set our goals and get better every game and that type of thing. But you know, they're in the business of winning. And I think Florida, they're off to a good start. I think that's a bubble that will probably burst at some time. I don't necessarily think they're as good as they're playing right now. But again, when you can score on the power play, you know, it's going to give you a pretty big weapon in your back pocket to, you know, to take advantage of teams. So I think if the Preds can clean up their penalty kill on special teams, I think they're going to be good.
And we'll see it. Predators get started 6:00 Central Time tomorrow night against the Florida Panthers. See, Mace, appreciate you, my man.
Thanks, buddy.
Does it for this edition of Smashville Live. We'll be back next Wednesday. Hope everybody has a great rest of your night. This has been Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.